Thanks for joining us for the Minor Tweak Major Impact podcast. This is a special episode as this is our first episode with two guests. I had the pleasure of speaking with Kali Maurer and Dr. Kaylin Summigray from Yale University. Kali is currently a MS student postgraduate associate in the Summigray Lab at Yale School of Medicine. The lab and her own project focuses on the small intestine, with crypt morphogenesis being a major area of interest, particularly when it comes to the role of cell shape changes in developing crypts. In her spare time, she likes to talk to others about accessibility in STEM fields. Kaylin is Kali's PI, and she's originally from upstate New York, but spent the majority of her adult life in North Carolina, where she earned a PhD in cell biology from Duke University, followed by two postdoctoral positions at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, then Duke University. At Duke, she worked in the lab of Dr. Terry Lechler studying intestinal crypt morphogenesis. She started her own lab in the Department of Genetics at Yale University a year ago, which is the lab that Kali is working in. This conversation with Kali and Kaylin was very eye-opening and inspiring, as they both do an incredible job of working together towards and communicating the importance of accessibility in STEM, which is too often ignored and overlooked. There's so much to learn and to get out of this episode, so let's jump right in. Kali and Kaylin, I would like to welcome you both to the Minor Tweak Major Impact podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to be here today.
Can you both please quickly introduce yourself and tell us about your backgrounds and what you're currently working on? Kali, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'm Kali. I'm a current postgraduate associate in the Yale School of Medicine, which is Yale's fancy way of saying that I'm a postdoc. I got a BS in genetics, cell and developmental biology from Arizona State University, and I'm currently pursuing an MS in biology at the University of St. Joseph in West Hartford. I've been doing research for about 10 years in everything from cancer biology to biophysics to cardiovascular biology. Now I work with Kaylin in a cell biology lab that focuses primarily on morphogenesis of the intestinal crypts. Because there's such proliferative capacity in the intestinal stem cell niche, it's really important to study how that niche located within the intestinal crypts develops. And in my spare time, I like to do what I can to make science more accessible for students with disabilities.
Great. And Kaylin, do you want to quickly introduce yourself as well?
Sure. I'm Kaylin. I am an assistant professor in genetics at Yale University, and my lab started exactly 1 year ago. I'm trained as a cell biologist. I got my PhD at Duke University in cell biology, studying cytoskeletal elements in the epidermis. But now my lab is interested in mechanisms that drive intestinal stem cell niche formation and the role the stem cell niche architecture plays in stem cell function.
Great. Thank you both so much. And now my next question is, Kali, you're doing a very, very important job of openly communicating and talking about accessibility in STEM, which is really awesome. And I was wondering if you could please tell us a little bit more about your story and tell us about your journey that led you to really be where you are today.
Yeah, so my journey was very unconventional, actually. I'm older than most postgrads in this department, I think all of them, and I think in general, because my pathway to STEM was so difficult and had so many obstacles. I have several diagnosed disabilities, but my cerebral palsy, which usually results from an accident at birth that damages your cerebellum, which fine-tunes like your balance and motor skills, and my nonverbal learning disability are particularly impactful day-to-day. And actually, these disabilities were my initial motivation to pursue a science career. So when I was growing up, accessibility efforts for high-functioning individuals were designed to help us blend in. Disabled students or students with disabilities were encouraged not to talk about our disabilities and to hide them. And we were told that we could do everything anyone else could. And I knew that wasn't true, but I wanted to believe it so badly because I wanted the same type of future that was so readily promised to other students that I did what was asked of me and I hid them. And because of this, I struggled even more in and out of the classroom because I wasn't getting the things I needed, like extra time on tests or help staying organized or breaking down tasks. And when I was in high school, we had to do these independent research projects in my biology class. And I really loved doing it, but I'd miss a lot of school because it was so hard for me to fit in and I didn't want to be there. But I loved these projects, and research was the only thing that ever really got me to go to school and left me excited to learn. And I realized that this was something that I could do as a career. And that was kind of it at that point. But because I was taught to hide who I was, and I had so much internalized ableism, I thought I needed to focus on research to treat the disabilities that had made my life so difficult. And because I wanted to be normal so badly, I got into research thinking I was going to like fix disability, not seeing anything wrong with that at the time. I was 16 years old and that seemed fine to me at the time. And when I got into college, I immediately sought research, but it was actually really difficult. I noticed I would make more mistakes than most people or hold my pipettes differently. I had some trouble with my vision and trouble following protocols that the first PI that I worked with had. And I didn't think about things the way that everyone else did. And I could tell that my PI at the time was frustrated with me and I was frustrated with me. And it's honestly just a product of happenstance that I figured out what to do next to help myself succeed in labs. A few years later, after struggling for a while, I had to get another evaluation done for disability accommodations. And for the first time, I didn't ignore the results or shove them in a drawer. And I decided to be brave, I guess, and read the report. And I'm actually glad I did because it explained my struggles with certain tasks reflected in my learning disability and cerebral palsy. And as I went over the clinician's words, I understood why I'd had so much trouble in lab environments, and I began taking steps to make things easier for myself in lab environments. And I knew I needed detailed written protocols, and in some cases, some fine motor assistance to compensate for my cerebral palsy or my tendency to skip steps in a protocol because of my learning disability. So I just needed a little more help. And you'd think the problem was solved, I guess, now that I've identified these barriers, but it wasn't that simple. So most labs I've been in have not provided those types of protocols, even when I requested them. In most cases, I was expected to train myself or find and modify my own protocols, even as an undergrad. And the tricky thing about that, especially if you're new to a field, is that experiments, as we know, have a lot of variables and a lot of room for error, and small deviations in an established protocol might be impactful in one set of experiments, but might have worked really well for the person that was writing the protocol. So it can be tough to recapitulate data without direction from a more established scientist, especially like as a newbie. And I know that the tendency is probably to say that I just need to be more persistent when I asked for protocols or requested fine motor assistance. But unfortunately, even that doesn't help much of the time. So I was actually on a diversity supplement with a plan tailored to meet my needs as a disabled student in that lab. And the PI made a lot of promises about the structure of her lab and things she was going to do that just never came to pass. And these were simple accommodations. So it doesn't always happen. And this covers just a small subset of the problems they face as a disabled individual in the lab, because so much of our communication is nonverbal. Small social cues that escape me, or small deviations in the way I hold a pipette or pick up tips or add antibodies to a tube, for example, have all been a source of like even teasing and harassment in lab environments. And in some cases, these small deviations were used as evidence of poor fit, even if they didn't impact my results. So usually when you join a lab, you have to get approval of lab mates or, you know, get along with them. And because ableism is so entrenched in our society, lab mates can struggle to understand why I'm different. And those miscommunications can be the difference between finding a scientific home, for lack of a better word, and not finding one. And in fact, this is a common issue for students with disabilities in general. We represent around 20% of the population and around 11% of classrooms, but only about 3-6% of all PhD holders in the sciences. And the most frequent reason cited for dropping out is lack of support. We have trouble getting accommodations and trouble getting PIs to take us and trouble accessing lab spaces because even disability support centers, although they may be able to help us in the classroom, they have no idea what to do with us in the lab. And access coordinators are often not trained for that. So because of my own experience as a disabled student in STEM, I have become passionate about helping others with disabilities navigate lab spaces so that we can have the same opportunities that our able-bodied classmates receive. Because this isn't really a leaky pipeline for us. It's more of a sieve, and I think we deserve better. And I got super, super lucky because Kaylin has been patient and open to learning. But this is pretty rare in general, and I wouldn't expect it of like a brand new tenure track professor. I didn't expect it. And now that I have the support I need in the lab, I'm taking this time to speak out about the plight of disabled students in STEM fields so that individuals can learn more about accessibility and how to help us achieve our scientific potential.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I think that it's very impressive and very awesome how you really just talk about these things so openly. And I think it's very, very important for us to do that. Also, when I was thinking about what kind of questions to ask you both, it was a little bit difficult, honestly, for me to know what kind of terminology even to use. Like, are we talking about accessibility of protocols or like accessibility in general, or do we talk about disability? Like, I think it's just like very important to get all these things out there so that people are aware of it and that we can actually make a change. So I really appreciate you talking about it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's funny that you bring up terminology, because Keelan and Alabmi and I were just discussing some terminology yesterday and why, for example, like it's considered not appropriate to use the phrase differently abled, but that for some disabled students, they will say, I'm disabled, and other students will say, I'm a student with a disability, and how they prefer to refer to themselves is very much a function of saliency of identity and the experiences that we have that are very different and a reflection of our dynamic disabilities.
Right. Yeah, I think it's definitely very important to talk about it for sure, for a start. But then, so my next question is, and this is a question that I always ask on this podcast, this is what this podcast is called, Minor Tweak, Major Impact. But did you ever experience a minor tweak, major impact moment in your research? And this could mean maybe because a specific detail wasn't provided for a protocol and therefore the protocol didn't work. Or did you ever experience anything like that? The method description just was lacking details, and that's why the protocol, it just didn't work the way it was given to you. And this is for both of you. Kaylin, if you experienced anything, I'd be happy to hear that as well.
Sure, I'll have to go back to my postdoc days when I did a lot more bench work. But during my postdoc, I actually spent an entire year optimizing a FACS sorting protocol to isolate intestinal epithelial cells. And it turns out the biggest difference was whether the buffer I used contained magnesium and calcium or not. But in the protocols that we were using, it just said use Hank's buffer. But if anyone has used Hank's buffer before, you know there's many different formulations of it. And just figuring out which one of those actually cost me an entire year of work.
And Callie, did you ever experience anything like that?
Yeah, I guess in two different ways. So in the last lab that I was in, the one where I was on the diversity supplement and it was hard to get accommodations, I spent, I think, 6 months troubleshooting RNA isolations. And it was super weird. I'd never seen anything like it. But my 260-230 ratios were really low. And then my 260-280 were much lower than they should have been as well. But I realized, because I was using Trizol, my 260-230 ratios were probably going to end up being inhibitory, and I had to do all this work to figure out how to pull all this extra ethanol off. And yeah, it took a really long time, and that was super difficult just because it took so much of what originally should have been a year-long position. And I guess I've even experienced it in my current lab, but in a little bit of a different way. So Kaylin's created very detailed protocols that make it easy to reproduce experimental results. And it took a while for us to be able to communicate with each other in a way that we both understood and were comfortable with. But once we figured that out, we were able to get these protocols squared away. And it's made such a difference for me in the lab. And people with nonverbal learning disabilities have trouble inferring steps in a protocol and interpreting abstract ideas in them. Like the difference between shaking or inverting a tube to Kaylin and to me might be very pronounced, for example. To be honest, I think that implementing this accommodation even changed the way that we relate to each other in a positive way. And it's helped me feel at home in the lab for the first time. And I've never had a PI that's been willing to provide this kind of detail or meet fine motor constraints before without ridicule. So I feel like really fortunate. And in the past, this accommodation wasn't provided, even if it was discussed and agreed to ahead of time. And it's made my job difficult. So it was impossible in many cases to get the desired result because I didn't have the protocols I needed. So Kaylin's lab has been a game changer for me.
My next question is extending what you just talked about a little bit, but how have really minor tweaks in the presentation or documentation of lab protocols made an impact in really making things easier for you?
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about this, but to be more precise, by giving me detailed directions, I can check off each step as I go so I don't skip them. And she gives me the protocols ahead of time, which really helps me to stay organized. It's hard for people with nonverbal learning disabilities to sometimes follow protocol if someone else is showing it to you without written words to accompany it. And it's hard to pay attention to small details if I'm writing down an entire protocol as I'm seeing it for the first time. When she gives them to me ahead of time and they're more detailed, I can focus on watching her and just taking a few notes here and there. And it leaves me less overwhelmed and more confident, and it's easier to organize data and procedures. And it helps because I don't have to write super quickly. So because of my cerebral palsy, my handwriting is often illegible, which Kaylin can attest to. If it's typed up for me, I don't have to work so hard and I can read my own notes because I'm able to write more slowly. So I feel so much better coming into lab each day. And by doing this really simple thing, I feel supported and welcomed, and I feel like it facilitates my success and I really appreciate it.
Great. And I think, Kaylin, you're doing a lot of things and you're really providing recommendations and really helping Kali to do things more easily. But I was wondering, what can other team members, NPIs, do to help and make things easier when someone in the lab has a disability?
Yeah, so I think everything I've learned about this has been through Kali. And so I appreciate her willingness to teach me as I go as well. But I think the biggest thing is making the lab feel welcoming and have a safe environment for everyone. What Kali and I have found works really well for us is really actually giving her space to modify protocols without judgment. So as I've said, I'm sort of new at being a PI. I've only had a lab for a year, and Kali was my first employee. So it was just me and her most of the time. And because of that, I was always in the lab with her. And you'd think that's actually a good thing. But because Kali has to modify things to make them work for her, that can leave you open for judgment. So I recommend, if you're unsure about why someone's doing something the way they are, just ask. In my experience, Kali's been really open in explaining the rationale or need for doing something differently. So I can give you two examples of this. One is, we use mice as a model system. So we do a lot of genotyping, which requires a whole lot of tubes lined up and they're all numbered. And Kali had asked to help her come up with ways to become more efficient in the lab. And I noticed she didn't take tubes out of the centrifuge in order. And I was like, Kali, just put them in order. What's the big deal? Just put them in order, because you just have to order them again later. And it turns out that because of her cerebral palsy, it's in her dexterity, it's hard to just grab them one by one out in order. But if she can just sort of grab her hand and take a handful, it's quicker for her. But it took us days to actually get to the point where we could have that conversation about, why are you doing it this way? And why aren't you listening to me? You asked for my help and I'm trying to help you. And I didn't even stop to think that maybe she's not doing it for a reason. But at the time, she didn't feel necessarily safe or comfortable telling me that reason. And so by continuing to try to have conversations, I think we were able to figure out how to talk to each other. And I think for me, feeling like she was receptive to answering these questions and being comfortable sharing these reasons with me was a big deal.
Great. So I think, yeah, communication seems to be definitely a key here. But are there any other things that you two did to work together to figure out what things you could change and do to really improve Kali's experiences and opportunities within the lab? Are there any other suggestions or recommendations that you could give to somebody if maybe they're in the same situation? Like, what really has worked for you two?
So I would say that communication is the biggest thing in it. It sounds so simple, but I have found that it is probably one of the single biggest obstacles to being disabled in a lab. The conversations that Kaylin and I have are the first time that anybody's ever sort of listened to me talk about disability-oriented issues in the lab. And it's the first time that anybody's ever been honest with me in terms of how my disabilities are interpreted in the lab. So I would have like sort of hunches before that something was going on, but I couldn't confirm it. And she was just very honest. And because she was honest, we were able to tackle these issues head on. So I think it made a huge deal. And to be honest, like the first few months here were hard and I was the only student in the lab and I felt like I was failing and I had a lot of shame and I had trouble juggling so much work and deciding what to do first because of my nonverbal learning disability. We have trouble interpreting the urgency of tasks and prioritizing them. And I was really having such a hard time, and I think it affected like our relationship too and how we work together. And neither of us, for example, were really getting what we needed. And I think I had expectations that weren't being met, and so did Kaylin and the lab because of COVID in March. Our lab actually almost tripled in size between March and April. So I didn't have to juggle everything anymore when we came back, and I got to like design my own project for when we got to go back into the lab, and it allowed me to showcase my passions, I guess. And I think it showed another side of me to Kaylin, and it opened the door for some of those tough conversations about, you know, I thought you just maybe weren't listening to me when I would give you advice, and being like very honest and just sort of admitting those things was super helpful. And we were able to talk things out and get these protocols in place. And in addition to facilitating my success in the lab, I think it made our communication better. And she's also given me a lot more freedom, which she mentioned, but it's been great. And I don't have to live in constant fear that like I'll hold a pipette in a way that she's never seen or something, and that she'll not want to teach me because of it.
Yeah, but I think it's just really awesome to see how both of you have worked on this. And I think it can really be an inspiration to a lot of other people out there to just really open up to it and really make things work. And I think you're doing really an awesome job to just figure these things out. And I'm very happy to have these conversations with you. And we just have like one last question that usually is like our fun question. And usually I ask for, in general, just tools that people would wish for, tools that might not exist yet today that would make the life of researchers easier. But I think today I would like to ask it a little bit differently. So I would ask you, like, if you were allowed to make a wish for a tool that would make the lab life and work of researchers with disabilities easier, what would that be? And this is really our fun question, and any answers are allowed.
Kaylin, do you want to go?
Oh, sure. So I think, I mean, this is hard. As Callie has taught me, disabilities are dynamic. It's not some static thing that you can walk into the lab and say, okay, let's give you these accommodations and they're going to fit in every situation. So there's not like a one size fits all solution that's going to work for not only just Callie, but universally as people with disabilities. Not to belabor the point, but I think what Callie has taught me the most is that the biggest obstacle for people with disabilities is the lab environment and walking into an environment where they don't feel equal, welcome, or safe. Again, I think it's naive to think we can really establish these judgment-free zones, but any means to get closer to that is, I think, a step in the right direction. And again, the first step in this is having an open line of communication with each other. And from the PI perspective, it's asking them, you know, how can I help you? But then really listening to the answer. Right. So another example I'd say is Callie had asked me to help her organize her days. How do you structure a day to get everything you need done? And I suggested using a weekly planner because that's how I do it. And I bought her a weekly planner, and then I got really angry because she didn't use it. And it turns out, like, I never stopped to think, you know, she doesn't necessarily organize her thoughts this way, or she can't structure a day like this because of her nonverbal learning disorder. I just saw it as, well, she's clearly not interested in actually improving. But when I finally said to her, hey, Callie, why aren't you using the weekly planner I bought you? She then felt comfortable saying it to me and telling me exactly, you know, why doesn't that work for not only her, but it's actually a fairly common thing among people with nonverbal learning disorders. But had I not asked, I wouldn't have known. I wish that in the future, I don't get angry first and that I ask in the beginning.
And I think something that was, I guess, cool about it was that in my experience, when I have had discussions sort of in hindsight about how my disability might be impactful in a lab, I've been in situations where peers or mentors won't want to admit that it clouded their judgment, but you can tell by the nature of the conversation that it did. And I guess by just being honest, I think that Kaylin did something really unique, which is that it gave me an opportunity to, I guess, not sit and wonder in a lab setting, like there was just something like wrong with me or if I was like just defective. I mean, it just highlighted how simple miscommunication that's like not malevolent or anyone's fault can like be a barrier for people with disabilities. So I guess I'm glad that she's so honest, and I feel like it's unique because it's allowed us to overcome a lot of obstacles that I think I've never really had the opportunity to overcome before. And I guess to get back to your question of if there could be any tool in the lab for students with disabilities, what would it be? And to that point, this is probably like the worst answer ever, but I honestly wouldn't wish for a tool. I would just wish that researchers and PIs would try harder to understand disabled students or students with disabilities so that we wouldn't be actively pushed out of lab spaces. And I want equity and access, and I want what I've experienced in Kaylin's lab to happen for all disabled students in some fashion. And I want people to make space for us like she did for me.
That's very great. Callie and Kaylin, thank you both so much for being with us today and sharing your stories and insights on the Minor Tweak Major Impact podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
This is your host, Anita, and we look forward to being with you for our next episode.
This program was produced by H Media. We'll see you soon.